everyone. Welcome to the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper. We have a great show coming up for you today. On this week's episode, Abby Chin and Brian Scalabrine sat down with the Celtics' new Big Three during Media Day. So let's start off with the newest Celtic, Kyrie Irving, followed by Gordon Hayward and Al Horford.
Okay, who invented Uncle Drew? Because my kids love Uncle Drew. Before we traded for you, I knew Uncle Drew, right? Yeah. But they had no idea. Yeah. I showed them. Mm-hmm. So
I appreciate that.
They love it. Yeah. It's like a standard. We talk about Uncle Drew almost every single day in the house. So who invented Uncle Drew?
Well, Uncle Drew comes from my middle name. It was Andrew. So that was pretty easy to make it Uncle Drew. But Pepsi Max approached me when I was after I finished my rookie year.
Plug.
Yep. Absolutely, throw that in there. Pepsi took over it.
Plug.
And then shouts to them. But we started in Bloomfield, New Jersey, and it started as this idea of it sparked from this older man. I'll give you a quick synopsis. Older man goes to a skate park in California, brings his skateboard out of a briefcase. All these older guys, all these skaters are out there like watching the dude. He's stretching. He's like. He's terrible at first, and then after a while, he starts to warm up, then he starts doing these unbelievable tricks, folds up his skateboard, and then leaves. And, like, everyone is just there, just marveling this thing. So be good to bring it to basketball. So I went there, was filming, like, a fake documentary for my best friend, Kevin Philemon. Ended up, schooling the Youngbloods after
that. They didn't know.
No, the first one, they
Somebody
didn't know.
Knew there.
Somebody in my family knew. Like, my family was there, but they knew we were, they thought the actors or the people that we, like, the extras that we paid to be in it, like they thought they would be part of a documentary.
Yeah, sure.
So here's this older guy coming out. I think my Uncle Drew can play, but get on the court and then start bringing it up now after that. Yeah.
How long does the makeup take?
3 hours.
Oh,
oh my God. Then you gotta like stretch
beast
after
play,
that.
Beast to play with all that on? Like the weight and.
Mm-hmm. 28 days I did it for in Atlanta. 28 days.
Every day. Put it on.
Except for the weekends.
It's Did you hot. Ever go out?
Hell no, Scal. No. Going out.
Hey, y'all, I teach y'all youngers how to dance. I'll show y'all.
Saying, if I go out there, oh my goodness. My whole makeup, my whole face will come off after the night.
Dripping.
Yeah,
on
my goodness.
Outside.
Yeah.
The movie okay. was what? Or like more like, what? 28 days of doing what and what do we expect and when?
So 28 days, Lionsgate, Temple Hill partnered.
Plug.
And yep, Temple Hill, you know that. And they ended up getting the movie received from Jay Longino, who wrote the movie, and then Charles Stone directed it. So we're in Atlanta, and it's basically a storyline about Uncle Drew putting the team back together. So we have Lisa Leslie, Chris Webber, Shaq, Nate Robinson, Erica Ash, and then Lil Rel, who was in the movie Get Out. He was the police officer in Get Out. We got Mike Epps in it. We got J.B. Smoove. We got Rick Ross in it. We got freaking NeNe Leakes from from Atlanta. So it's like we had a whole bunch of cameos. Hopefully we get Spike in it. We had Coach Calipari in it as well. So it's like we had a surplus of people in there that wanted to be part of Uncle Drew. And I'm glad that it turned out to be a great project.
No White Mamba? What's the deal?
White Mamba, we showed up too late, Mike Mamba.
I
could have
been
late to the party. You said late to the party.
Dang it.
Now that Scal has softened you up. Serious topic. As someone who has been to the White House to celebrate a championship, what do you think about Donald Trump's comments and everything that's going on right now?
Oh, man. I now that we jumped from Uncle Drew to soften me up. But the only hope and only focus that is always primary to me is making sure that individual they understand what individuality is and what someone's freedoms and thoughts and how they live their lives is based on their decisions. So making a stand or taking a stance, I don't think that it should ever be seen as something that ultimately creates division or separation. Any thoughts or feelings that you have, as long as there is no gray area between right and wrong and black and white. Like it's just like we're together. We want social equality. We want this for us as human beings. That should be a fundamental, like a foundation for what we believe in. And I just hope that that's the only focus and intent that individuals have, and when they stand up for things that mean something to them, is that, one, it has to mean something to you. It's your own interpretation. Then as well as if we're sharing a conversation like this and we talk about it, there is no division or there is no judgment. There isn't anything, because that ultimately will create what's going on right now. It's the separation of having two sides of what's wrong and what's right. And It's just, it's pretty simple if you think about it. It's just all about equality. That's all it is. And when you think about it, it gets lost in some of the, you go into politics and then you have athletes and now you have politics, stay out of politics. And then it's like so many different conditions that they try to limit in terms of what a human being can think or feel. And that's my only intent. I'm with whoever is about being an individual, all those who want to be an individual and have those individual rights and thoughts and promote them to whoever that may be. You can keep them to yourself or you can take a stance and take a kneel or however you feel like deems best for you to get your point across or what you feel and how you live your life and how you better yourself. I'm completely with that. I'm not with the whole separation and division thing and you think this and you think that because, Jesus, we all share the earth together. I mean, like, we all share it together, all of us, like, as human beings. Like, why create that division, you know what I mean, based on social class or economic status or whatever? Like, you know, I think this and you think that. I mean, I'm still going to be the same person, like, that is going to stand up to you, look in your eyes and tell you how I feel and be honest. And that's all you want is that expectation of knowing that you're going to get the truth from people. And I feel like that gets lost sometimes. So that's how I feel about it after I've been softened up by White Mamba.
Go again.
Like in school, when someone goes with an answer like that, what are you normally supposed to do? Because I can go back to like, why'd you pick number 11?
Let's talk basketball.
Okay, so you're saying I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Good.
We had to get it out of the way.
I know there's not a lot of numbers available. Explain the number 11.
My dad wore it at Boston University. And it's just been in my family for a while. So it was a pretty easy choice. And I wore it in high school as well for the St. Patrick's Celtics. So it was kind of an easy transition to pick number 11. Yeah.
Have you pictured that first trip back to Cleveland? That it comes in 3 weeks? And what is that going
to
be like
to
for
it.
You?
I'm looking forward to it. You know, the actual experience of it, I'm looking forward to it. Everything that comes with it will come regardless. Like it's going to be what it is, regardless. And that's the whole respect that I have for individuals. Like, whatever they feel, whatever it's... And I just hope they put it in perspective. Like, this is all over just two hoops in a 29-and-a-half, you know, size basketball that we're just going out there to compete and compete with guys that that I'm getting to know now with my new teammates with a new organization. And that's what I see it as. Now, whatever it may be for everyone else, that's completely on them. I'm pretty sure it'll be... however it's going to be, and I'm looking forward to that. So, like I said, obviously you can see this is a big question mark when you go into there because you never know. You never know when you leave, you know, one environment, you go into another. So I'm excited either way. So there's a lot of love that I have in there still. So
that never know, you never know. It doesn't seem to bother you.
No, hell no. Why would it?
No. And also...
Hey, why would it ever?
You can't worry about something
challenges
like
that come about back against the wall. It doesn't seem to bother you either.
No. Why wouldn't it?
But does anything bother you? No, because, you know, in the NBA, people overreact to such the smallest things, right? Yeah. And, like, these huge things, like going back to Cleveland and this and LeBron and you and all this, it doesn't even affect you. It almost looks like you're like, I'm down for the challenge. Is it? Are you down for the challenge of, you know, dethroning your former team?
See, it's like... You put those goals in perspective and you take those challenges, and all I've known my whole entire life is whether you're back against the wall or whether you're preparing for going into a fight or whatever the challenge may be, what I've learned how to survive at life with is just it makes it easier to apply that to basketball. Like, it's just literally I've worked my tail off to be the best I can be. Then you want the results and you ultimately want to be, you know, in a winning environment after you come out of that challenge. And whether you win or lose, it's not going to dictate like anything else other than leaving those emotions in that moment than what just happened. Like, give it your all. Just, and it's okay to care when you're in that moment. Like, when I'm in the game, nothing else will matter. It's going to come in waves. Like, it's going to go up. You're going to go down. Something, like, probably get my shot blocked and the crowd will go crazy. Or, like, I'll miss. I'll shoot an air ball my first shot. Who knows? Like, you start playing all those thoughts, and at the end of the day, none of it is real until it actually happens. So why even psych myself out for something that I haven't experienced yet? I care a lot. I want to win. That's it. It's simple. It's just basketball. Like, it's not like me raising my daughter, like, and that's a hard thing. Like, me, you know, figuring out how I'm going to teach my daughter about, you know, social issues or something like that, or bring to my friends or tell them that something enormous happened in my life. Like, it's just basketball. It's like you put a ball in a hoop. You're really good at it. You work your ass off. Leave it on the court. That's it. Like, game four of the playoffs. Like, going at that. Like, I get that shit right there excites me because it's my game. I love to do it. when I'm in it, I'm in it. But once I leave, like, I go home to my daughter, I go home to my family. Like, I can just, you know, and you can still love it.
All right, let me ask you this. Were you bored last March and April?
Was I what?
Bored a little bit.
Was I bored? What do you mean?
You started the season out a certain way in March and April. You guys were like, yeah, we're going to shut this down because we know there's a level that we can go to that no one can mess with us. So does like sometimes that the mundane of the 82 and the grind every day, do you get a little bored?
Yeah, it got trying for us.
Yeah, okay.
It definitely did. Because we also were older. So we had like 29 plus. Like that was our average. Like we were like what, the second oldest in the league.
Yeah.
And now I go to, I don't know what we are in the league, but I think Al's like the only one that's over 30. Yeah. So, you know, when you have that rigorous grind, you know about it, white mom. Like that is just constant. Like, and then when you've been BSing for so many months to getting by, and then you like, okay, we got to turn it up. And then guys on the Versa Climber before the day before, and you know how they like running on the treadmill, losing weight, and guys in the steam room every day, like,
you're ready for the playoffs.
You're getting ready for it. Yeah.
You're like, yeah. But it's true. If you can go into Game 7 Oracle and win, what really moves the needle over the 82?
Yeah.
So is there something moving the needle this year?
Oh, yeah.
I figured.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Last one for me, Coach Stevens. Just in the little bit of time that you spent with him, what excites you most? What have you seen from him? And especially watching from the other sideline for the last few years.
Well, watching from the other sidelines, you just get a kind of an outside observer's view because you hear so many great comments about, you know, what he is in terms of an intellectual and what he brings to the game and his talent that he brings out of the players. And you that surfaces and you hear like his best young coach in the NBA right now, and he's cementing himself by getting better from season to season to season to season. He's consistent all the time, and he's like, he just, and the guys love him, and they love playing for him, and the city loves him, and you just start hearing this, and you start hearing these rumbles. And once I got to see him at All-Star Game this past year, which is kind of ironic as well, but I've been in 4 All-Star games, and that was the one that I remember most because Coach Stevens took the time to put all our child highlights together and from high school, and you know, put pictures up of like all of us individually, like Paul Millsap, Bron, myself, Paul George, like everybody, like, and it's all of us, and we're sitting there before the All-Star game, and he's like, don't ever forget, like, this is where it started for you guys, like this love, and you guys are all here sharing this experience, and I want to make this memorable. And right there, he did. And that right there was aside from the basketball. And that character was just an automatic check for me. You know what I mean? So that's what I got from the outside. And then now being in the trenches with him now, oh, man, I wouldn't want to be with another coach because he is that intellectual. He is that high character guy. He's growth oriented. He wants the best for his team. He's realistic about his goals, about the mission. He's always just always punctual, understanding that, just that's who he is. Like, he's a smart individual that knows basketball. So, you know, Ken, I don't know if he can necessarily play it that well because I saw a box score. He was like 2 for 14 in a matter of 15 minutes. So I don't know if he can do it.
You should stick around. We got to get on the 3-on-3 game.
You know what I'm saying? I might have to see a few of those.
You know who he plays like? Nick Stauskas. That's who he plays.
Get him up.
Not the new Nick, the old Nick with Sacramento. have you noticed the shift? Are you telling me you got to go? This is the last question. Don't even look at me like that. Have you noticed the shift from like the way that people looked at you when you were in Cleveland and now the way that these young players look at you now in Boston?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I care enough, but I care more about them developing rather than them seeing me as like this outworldly player, because I'm so connected to them because I do it like that. That culture that they embody, like I just came out of it. I'm not too removed from it. I'm still able to talk to Jason and Jalen about things that is going on in their lives right now, currently being 19 and 20, because I just lived that. Like I was a number one pick. I went to a situation like we weren't a good team when I was my first 3 years. I was like dealing with this mental pressure and dealing with all this other stuff, and here they are in a great team that we have now. And it's like I have all that wisdom to offer to them about being on a great team and knowing what it takes and understanding that sometimes as a young player, you're gonna have to go through an outworldly amount of things. And I, to be able to have that conversation with those young guys and be at USA and have D. Russell and have Jordan Clarkson and have all these guys from different teams. I don't know why I just said some two Lakers specifically, but it was like seeing them and seeing them develop over time, because ultimately, just like the older guys told me, one day it's going to be their league. Yeah. It's going to be their league. It's inevitable. Father Time is undefeated. So how do you still make your legacy last? And I remember, and I know how much the Lakers and stuff like that in Boston goes, but Kobe said one time, he said the measure of greatness is how much information and knowledge can you pass on to the generation that's coming up. And that was like the true tail sign. It's not going back and rewinding and trying to change your mistakes to do this. He was like, man, if I could leave a lasting legacy with a generation that's coming up and put my imprint on it, I feel like that's the essence of greatness right there. So that's what I try to embody and go into it when I'm talking to those guys and younger guys.
What was it like stepping off the plane and seeing Brad and Micah standing there waiting for you at the airport?
Yeah, it was actually unexpected because I just had done Miami before, and that one was like security detail, like every back road with police escort and everything. And then Boston was like Micah and Brad at the terminal, and that was about it. And he drove us to the hotel, and we got lost on the way. And it was exactly kind of what I remembered, though, of how he was. And so it was cool that it was like a deja vu moment of when I was taking a recruiting visit to Butler.
So you weren't thinking like, well, this Mickey Mouse operation they got running here.
No. I just thought like, this is something Brad would do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get lost.
Get lost, not like,
there's ways, Brad, just use ways. It can't go wrong. I mean, I know I listened to the Woj podcast and how everything unfolded, but the whole like Chris Haynes thing and you haven't made the decision and this is what it is, like how frustrating was that?
It was very frustrating just because I was on the phone with my agent. We were basically talking about things at the moment, and then he was getting blown up, I was getting blown up, and we had to put everything on hold to go try to handle that situation. Correct. And we were for sure leaning towards coming to Boston, but it just wasn't. I wanted to be 100% sure, like, this is a life-changing moment for me and my family, and I want to make sure it's the one that I want to do. And so I wasn't 100 yet, and so that's where I was like, well, we got to go deal with this situation first, and then we can, you know, finally make the announcement.
And it was an emotional decision, but have you thought about what it's going to be like to go back to Salt Lake?
I've thought about it a little bit, yeah. I think we play there at the end of the year, mm-hmm. like end of March or something like that. So it'll be a while before I have to deal with any of that. There's actually been like so much noise this offseason that mine's kind of like an undercard story, which is nice for me. But I'm sure it'll be a little emotional when I go back.
Yeah, the first time you went through free agency, you guys had mentioned at the press conference that Kyrie was recruiting you to go to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And you thought about taking a visit there before, or you did take a visit before LeBron signed.
I took a visit there and he was there, and that was when I was restricted. Mm-hmm. So it was obviously a little different, and Utah ultimately ended up matching. But
what excited you about, or what excites you about this combination?
I think we have so many weapons on this team, and so many playmakers, and there's going to be a lot of space, and Brad is a genius with utilizing weapons, and so excited about, you know, all that potential.
Did that factor into your decision, like just playing with guys where you're going to have massive amounts of space? Because I do watch games, and It was truly amazing how you could be effective in an offense with very limited space. Now, is that sort of like, man, I'd like to play in a wide open system?
Yeah, I think that Brad showed me that when I came here. That was one of, you know, his recruiting spiels, I guess, was he said, look at all this space, and broke it down into statistically, this is what you do really well, and this is what you can do even more here. We can get you that. And he showed me the film of different plays that he had envisioned us running. And that's the part that I love about Brad, is the basketball genius part.
How much of it was unfinished business?
I still, like, leaving Butler the first, I mean, that was, next to this one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. And they ended up going back again the next year without me and lost again, which is probably even tougher on Brad. But we were so close that there is unfinished business with us. We want to win the whole thing.
And what's the story?
He said he still hates confetti. He can't stand it. He's just.
What's the story with, like, you're like this underrated tennis player, you're underrated basketball player, but you're awesome tennis player, and then you decide to play basketball. He recruits you, but no one else does. How exactly does that happen?
So, basketball was always my first love, but I got to a point, my parents were both 5'10". I tried to model my game after Steve Nash because I thought if there was a chance, I'd have to be like him. I'm not going to be that tall. I was like 5'10 as a freshman in high school. At that point in time, probably a better tennis player than a basketball player.
Now, are we talking like could be pro?
What year in high school?
I mean, when I was a freshman in high school.
Freshman, okay.
Yeah. I mean, at tennis, you kind of have to, in my opinion, you almost have to be like decided you're going to be a tennis player from little, like young
sister,
age.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like go to some academy. I mean, I was talented in tennis. So I didn't even win state. I tried to win state. I got to the Elite Eight, lost to the runner-up. But... yeah, so then I ended up growing, ended up becoming 6'8". Now the basketball offers are coming in. I didn't play basketball the summer before my senior year because I wanted to try to play and win a title for tennis. And so I kind of only had, like, I think it was Butler and Purdue and IUPUI. And that was, and Michigan came in late, but that was it.
Easy decision with Brad to Butler at that time?
Not an easy decision. No. My parents both went to Purdue. I was brainwashed to go there my whole life. We always went to Mackey and Gene Cady and Ross Ade for football games, and like that was my dream, was to play at Purdue one day. And for whatever reason, it didn't feel right. After going on to Butler's campus and speaking with Brad, and it just felt like the place that I needed to be.
Everyone, so. We always talk about how even keel Brad is, but can you give us your best mad Brad story?
Man. Everyone's asking me this. It's been like 8 years since I've played for him. It's hard to remember. He didn't get mad often. I do remember, I think I either blew an assignment defensively or didn't block out or something. And he called a timeout and we were in the huddle and he like slammed his clipboard down and the clipboard broke. I think a piece of it came at me. Okay. And he like, after that, he had his like 5 seconds of anger. Then he was like, are you all right? No, are you fine? I was like, coach, it's fine. Like, let's move on. Like, I'm all right. He's like, no, you're good, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But that was, there wasn't much,
no?
much anger.
So still, he was even like this back then?
Yeah. No, he was always under control with his emotions.
It's amazing.
What's the gamer thing that's, I totally threw it under the bus, but I didn't mean to do it that way. You're really into video games? Yeah. You're really into one particular video game?
No, I mean, I've always been a video game guy. For me, it was like another way, an outlet for competition. Like, I'm such a huge competitor, and I wanted to be the best with my friends, and we would go to tournaments, which I actually had to call Coach Steven and ask if it was against NCAA violations to go play for money, which was an embarrassing phone.
So are you a pro? Are you a professional?
You could?
I could do it. It was like a local tournament. I won like $50 or whatever, $100. But I had to ask Coach Stevens if it was okay. Because I didn't want to be like, my dad was like, you better call him. He didn't want me to be ineligible for like a video game tournament.
Yeah. So you can just come to my house and play Pac-Man.
Well, Coach Stevens, he sticks to the rules. So
yeah.
Like that was, like I said, an embarrassing conversation. but now I play PC games now a lot just to hang out with friends. Like when I went from Butler to Utah, like I'm basically no friends, no family there. And it was a way for me to still hang out and... also a way to compete, and so it's PC games now, okay, not necessarily one game.
Are you a pro or not? Like we're hearing
you're one of the
best players in the country outside of the people who spend 18 hours locked in a basement.
I would consider myself the best League of Legends player in the NBA.
Okay.
That's probably not saying much, though.
Okay.
It says something.
Yeah, so.
But you get beat by like a 5-year-old? Like
No. Like I'm solid.
Okay.
But... we're talking about pros here. Like, I would consider myself, if you were to, on a basketball scale, probably like a D1 athlete.
Oh.
You see what I mean?
D1 athlete can beat me one-on-one. Can you beat a pro one-on-one on your good day? Like, Steph Curry beat a golfer.
At golf, yeah.
Yeah, no, so.
Absolutely not.
You will never beat a pro?
Like, it depends. First, it depends which game, but also, like, it'd be like saying what a D1 athlete beat me in one-on-one.
Not you, but you're one of the best players in the league.
Okay, well, there's not very many pros.
Okay.
Gordon.
I guess you could say.
Yeah.
They're semi-pros.
Are you that?
I guess I was a semi-pro when I won that local tournament.
There you go, $50.
There you go.
You have gotten paid for winning a tournament. Yeah. Back to basketball media day.
Wait, are we?
Did you?
No one wants to know about that.
Did you hear the cheers when you were here from the Boston fans when you were here in the Garden last year?
I did hear the cheers, yes. And then that's all that I thought about it. Like, it was a quick, I think Joe Ingles and I talked about it, and that was, then we lost the game, and that was what we were talking about, so.
Did you hear the
was it
comments
weird for
by
you?
Jay Crowder? No, I'm just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. Scratch that one. Go ahead.
Was it weird for you? Was that?
Yeah, it was a little weird. But it wasn't, like, I knew that was because I was going to be free agent, and everybody's been connecting the dots with me and the Celtics since Coach Stevens came here, so.
And you were fully aware of their cap space situation and moving forward and all that.
Yeah, we had talked about it a little bit before the season, like right before my agent and I, about this next year.
Let's clarify that, yeah.
Yeah, before the season, it was like, this next year you're going to get people to talk about it, you know, you might have fans, whatever. So we kind of already knew going into it a little bit.
What was going through your mind when all of this, everything this summer is going down?
Well, for Gordon, I actually came up, mm-hmm. you know, for his visit and everything. So we had, you know, we had a good idea about that. But then, you know, I thought that was kind of it, you know, as far as that went. So when it happened, I was actually on my way to a baseball game. I was going to go see the Braves play and people were just blowing me, like, you know, everybody blowing me up. And as I was walking to the game, it's like, oh, did you hear? Kind of like, you know, just all the news that happened. So it was, like, very overwhelming those first hours and just a lot of emotions running through, you know, Jay and Isaiah, two guys that I really had a strong connection with. So it was it was a lot to digest and process. But you know, when I look at the potential being able to get a guy like Kyrie Irving, you know, really just got me excited the more and more I thought about it.
Yeah, the potential for those type of moves, isn't that part of what attracted you to this situation in the first place?
No question. And that's one of the things that, you know, that Danny and Wick and Pac sold me on when they recruited me in Atlanta. You know, they said that they were going to do whatever it took to try to contend and win a championship, and that they were going to make moves at one point or another. They didn't say when that was going to be, but they wanted to put our team in the best position to contend, and they did it. You know, they were able to do it. It was it was difficult because it broke a lot of the core that we had, but you know, they felt, and I feel, it's for the best of the Celtics franchise moving forward.
When you went and met with Gordon Hayward, did you know that you were going to have to get rid of some guys on the team? Is that, like, how does that make you feel? A team that you just went to war with.
Honestly, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand it was going to be in that way. And as you start, you know, the older you get in the league and you start understanding how things work, like this summer I learned a lot, but I didn't realize that it was going to be in that way. And then you start hearing, you know, get away what happens with the cap space and all
the
those things, and things were supposed to happen a certain way, but they didn't. So now they have to. So when that happened, I was like, whoa. And then, you know, then it everything started to become more real. And I was like, well, I didn't know that we had to give this up or do that. So you learn a lot about the process. But a guy like Gordon is somebody that I know that we've had our eyes on, and somebody that it's huge to be able to come to Boston, and his ability and what he can do. I think the fans are really going to appreciate him, not only on the offensive end, but defensively, what he brings. And that type of player, I feel like, will be very special here.
And then you said you've been pretty impressed with what you've seen from Kyrie so far, just being in the building.
Yeah, I know. I've been, you know, I've played against Kyrie many years, had our battles, but when I saw him work out last week, I was just very impressed just by by his ability and his work ethic and how hard he works and how focused, you know, he is. You know, I think that people don't, I don't think people understand, you know, how good of a player he is. And he will show that as time goes on. I'm just very excited to, you know, to have him on our side. A guy that's a clutch performer and they can, and that's not afraid of the moment.
What was last season like from you, for you, start to finish, all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals from game one?
Yeah, it was a learning experience for me, Scal. I tell you, you know, coming from Atlanta, you know, it was a different set of expectations. You get here, it's everything is new for me. It was, I felt like it was kind of like my rookie year. I had to like learn my way, find my way with the people, with the staff. We're gonna just everything, my surroundings, getting used to the city, and everything. So. As the year went on, I think it got easier for me. At first, it was just difficult, you know, making the adjustment. But by the end of it, by the playoffs, is when I felt good where I was at. I was good in a mental place. I felt like I was stable. I felt like the team, we finally got playing the right way, and the chemistry clicked, and we started. Once we lost those first two in the Chicago series, that's when I felt like we really grew as a team and started to blossom. As a group, so it was a learning experience, but it was it made me a better player.
When you looked at that, something also coincided with that. They shift you to the five. Is playing the five for 100 games maybe too much? But picking like little spot minutes here and there at the five, something that is probably more manageable.
I think you hit it on the nail. I think playing 100 games at the five, for me, it's probably too much. You know, it demands a lot from you physically. I can do it. I did it through my career in Atlanta, but looking at being able to be fresh for the playoffs and feel good and do things at the highest level, I think that it's probably best, you know, for me to play both positions, the four and the five. But I think that once I played at the five last year, our offense changed completely. We were much more dangerous. So I think the coach, we will find a happy medium of me playing four and five.
Yeah, we'll take some time. You said last year was a learning experience, and now you have an entirely new group of guys. But in your experience with Brad, how will he be able to kind of bring the best out of all of you guys?
Well, that's what he does best, I believe. I think his ability to make the most out of guys is make the most out of a guy's game. So he'll look at your strengths. He'll simplify the offense, but he'll put you in positions to be successful. So I think that with the new guys, it's all about buying into the system, really committing to what he's telling you. And defensively, we're going to help each other out. It's going to be by committee, and then on offense. You just follow what he tells you and attention to detail, and I think that would really make the transition easy for these new guys.
You know, obviously, you know, this year with the Hurricanes in the Dominican Republic, what was that like, knowing that this thing was coming and you have family back, or, you know, just like the friends and the islands is like sitting there right in the way?
No, yeah, I mean, we were, it was very difficult to watch. In fact, I had planned to do some basketball clinics down in Dominican, and we're still renovating some basketball courts down there for kids, and everything had to be put on hold because it was storm after storm after storm that was coming through, and it was very scary. We were fortunate that there was some damage, but it wasn't as bad as some of the other islands. But people still need a lot of help down there. And as of right now, we're still trying to find ways how to make an impact in the best way down there. We want to make sure that the help gets to the people and that we make a difference.
You spent a lot of time with Jalen this summer in Atlanta. How good do you think he can be? And what are you expecting from him this season?
Man, Jalen, I've been very impressed with his summer. I felt like he had a really good summer. I feel like he understands the game a little more. He feels more confident. And from what the time that I got to see, the time that I got to work with him, I just saw that he's much more improved. I think he's going to be able to step in and be a big help for us. He's just more confident, and he understands things a little more. What I'm going to say after him is defensively, I'm going to keep challenging him on the defensive end, because he has the ability to be a great defensive player. He has the size. He has the strength. So offensively, I'm not worried about Jalen. People will see that he has improved, but on the defensive end, we have to make sure that, you know, that he's giving us all he's got.
How do you view your role as a leader on this team?
I just want to make sure that I'm making the experience for the guys easier, the transition easier, helping them in any way that I can, making sure that I'm not only, you know, helping them on the court but off the court as well. There's a lot that's thrown at, especially to a lot of the newer guys. And I just think it's important for me as a leader to make sure that everybody is working together and that we're developing that chemistry. We need to develop that chemistry and that trust in each other. And that's just gonna, that's why I can't wait to get started tomorrow. You know, we're gonna start building it from the very first practice.
Thanks for listening to the Celtics Talk podcast, everyone. A reminder to make sure you go and rate and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and all your podcasting apps. I'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.